Welcome to the Maximizing Outcomes Podcast, brought to you by Jim McGovern and the McGovern Wealth Group. Achieving bigger and better results with money, family, and business isn't about creating a bigger to-do list for yourself. It's about who can help you create results without you having to do all the work. Listen as we provide uncommon perspectives, powerful resources, and experienced people that can help you maximize outcomes in your life. Let's get to the show.
The Roth IRA. It was created in 1997 as a powerful way to create a tax-free source of retirement income. And now, more than 32 million Americans own a Roth IRA. But, of course, there's a but. There are many rules to follow, myths to bust, and strategic moves to consider. I'm Patrice Sikora, and this is the Maximizing Outcomes Podcast with Jim McGovern. Jim, I'm really glad you're covering this topic today because listeners have been asking for an episode on Roth IRAs. Now, these Roth IRAs, really, they do have significant tax advantages. Wonderful. But do you find there's a lot of confusion around the subject?
There is. It's certainly a great tool, and it's becoming more and more popular over the last 25 years from this thing to go from zero to 32 million people. Obviously says that there's a lot of things about Roth IRAs that are attractive. But I think even just starting out with the name itself, Roth IRA, doesn't exactly mean much to the layperson, let alone all the nuances that come along with it. So the second thing is, I mean, like all retirement plans, the rules are not exactly straightforward. And if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, the rules are simple, I'd invite you to read IRS publication 590A in your spare time. It's about 59 pages of fine print of all the rules of IRAs and Roth IRAs. And there's a lot of little trap doors. There's a lot of rules to know. There's a lot of planning considerations to make. And some of them are very easy. It's based on pure math. But there's other assumptions about the future that you have to make. And if you're wrong, you might have the opposite result of what you're trying to accomplish. So this is going to be a bit of a crash course on Roth IRAs. And we'll start with the basics, and we'll get into more advanced topics by the end.
Okay. I'll read that booklet over the weekend or something,
Fall asleep for sure.
Before we get into the rules and strategies, though, of the Roth IRAs, give us a little bit more of the background and how they actually came into existence.
Sure. So there's two pieces of legislation that really created the Roth IRA. The first goes back to 1974, and that's when the traditional IRA was created. And this was a way to take money we earn today, put it into a retirement account, and deduct that against our income. So for example, if you had $10,000 that you wanted to put into the IRA, and I'm rounding these numbers just for simplicity's sake, not the actual formula, but if I put $10,000 in, I don't count that as income today. I get to defer that income tax into the future. I get to invest that money without taxation. But when I retire and I pull the money out, that's when the taxes are due. So let's fast forward to 1997. There was a bipartisan bill that got passed. It was the Taxpayer Relief Act. And that's when the Roth IRA was created. And people are like, well, why is it called a Roth IRA? Well, first off, let's be lucky that the Senator William Roth, who created this idea from Delaware, was the one who sponsored this bill, because they named the bill after him. If he had a really long last name, this would be even more complicated. But so, yeah, Senator Roth's whole idea was, let's provide the tax benefits, but do so in reverse. So you're not going to get a tax deduction today. So I'm going to earn the income, pay my tax, then contribute the money into the plan. And the money is going to grow tax-free and be able to be pulled out tax-free in retirement. So it's a bit of a difference, a bit of a shift between the traditional IRA and the Roth IRA. And when I say tax-free, it's tax-free after reaching the age of 59 and a half. So you can also pull a small amount of money out of the Roth IRA for a first-time home purchase. There's no required distributions when you hit a certain age, like you see with a traditional IRA. And when you pass away, the money is also tax-free for your heirs. They don't have to pay any taxes, but they do have to take the money out over a 10-year time period. So again, these are relatively new-ish. I mean, 25 years is not that old for a retirement plan, but along the way, the rules have changed. Things have been modernized. But of course, there's plenty of confusion and complexity. And now this whole concept of the Roth goes beyond IRAs. Now you can have a Roth 401k. You can do a Roth SEP IRA. There's Roth Simple IRA. So this whole, let's contribute after tax and then grow it tax-free has become attractive, and it's spread to other types of retirement accounts.
Jim, do you know what the reasoning was behind the creation of the Roth IRA? I mean, the government's going to get its taxes no matter what before.
That's what it was. Yep, you hit the nail on the head. It was this kind of like a, you know, you and the government were sort of both kind of delaying the taxation here. The government saying, if you're going to put money into this pre-tax account, we're delaying the use of that tax money till a much later date in the future. Hmm. So the Roth was a way to get some tax revenue coming in now, but still encourage you to save for retirement. So that was, it was more of the timing of when the government collects their money.
Got it. Okay. All right. So you've gone through the basics here, the origination of the Roth IRA, rules, eligibility requirements. Well, who is eligible?
So first off, there's no age requirements for this. So you can be very young, you can be very old. The age has nothing to do with it. What matters is, do you have earned income? So if you are married, but you don't have any earned income, you may still qualify to put money into a Roth IRA based on your spouse's income. And I'm going to go through what some of these income levels are. But in 2024, the contribution limit is $7,000, can go into the Roth IRA if you're under the age of 50. If you're over the age of 50, you get a catch-up contribution of an extra $1,000. So you can put up to $8,000 in. But let's talk about the income eligibility here a little bit, because remember, that was a big requirement. You have to have earned income from a paycheck. If you're single, your income has to be below $146,000 to put the full $7,000 in. If you make more than $146,000, but less than $161,000, don't ask me where these numbers came from. This is just the way the rules work. You have a partial contribution that's allowed. But if you're making more than $161,000 and you're single, you cannot contribute money to a Roth IRA. There's a couple of exceptions and some other ways to get around this, which we'll get into. But if you're married filing jointly, these income limits go up. So married filing jointly, the income limit is $230,000. And that phase out begins at 230, and you're completely phased out by the time you have income of $240,000. Now, they do adjust these for inflation periodically. And as far as the deadline goes, this question comes up all the time. When do I have to put the money in? Mm-hmm. It's not by the end of the calendar year. You have until the tax filing date. So if you have to file your taxes by April 15th of 2024, you can make your 2023 contribution up until that day. So you have to be careful when you're putting money into your Roth IRA in the first quarter of the year. Is you have to specify, is this going to count for last year's taxes or is it going to count for this year's taxes?
All right. So Jim, what about people who make more than the amount you just talked about? Can they just can't do a Roth IRA?
So this is a great question. This comes up all the time. So we're going to talk about Roth IRA. I'm going to give you an analogy. Like the Roth IRA is a popular nightclub, right? Everybody wants to get in. You go to the front door and there's a long line. Okay. Why do people want to get into this nightclub? Well, there's a big tax-free party inside. So when you look at the front door of the nightclub, there's a bouncer waiting for you. And the bouncer is checking IDs, except the ID is not looking at how old you are. The bouncer is looking for how much income did you earn. And if you make too much money, the bouncer says, get out of line. You can't come into the nightclub and get into the Roth IRA party. So like all nightclubs, there's always another door. Okay. You have a back door where maybe all the VIPs get into the nightclub. So there's a back door for the Roth IRA. And at that back door, any income level can get in, but there's a couple of checkpoints you have to go through first. The first is you have to make an after-tax contribution to a traditional IRA. So in other words, if I have $7,000, I put it into a traditional IRA. I don't take a tax deduction for that. And then I convert that traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. So when you make the conversion, you owe income tax on the earnings you made on the IRA. But because the money went in and was immediately converted, there wasn't enough time to earn anything on that IRA contribution.
Got it.
So technically there isn't a tax due when you make that conversion.
Okay.
So that's called a backdoor Roth IRA. There's articles all over the internet on this. It sounds very intuitive, very easy. There's also a side door. And the side door is, what if I have money that I already put into a traditional IRA, it was all in there pre-tax, and I'm starting to get worried about maybe the tax rates are going to go up in the future. I know what they are now. I want to get this money out of my pre-tax IRA into a Roth IRA. I can use what's called a conversion. So when you convert the money in an IRA to a Roth IRA, you're going to pay tax on that money today. And then that money goes into the Roth IRA and can enjoy tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawals in the future. So we've got three doors to go through. The front door, that's income-based. The back door, where we make an after-tax contribution to a traditional IRA, then immediately convert it. Or we have a conversion where we have maybe a large IRA balance. We want to start moving chunks of that into the Roth IRA over time. I just nickname it the side door. If you look for a side door Roth IRA conversion, you're not going to find an article about that. I just made that up. But this is more for our audience to visualize these things as they're looking to get into that tax-free party.
All right, Jim, how about getting money out of a Roth IRA? What are the things you got to think about here?
Sure. So most people think about the typical retirement plan rules where you have to be at least 59 and a half to take money out. But you know, things are going to come up in life. What if you need money sooner? So I want to stick with this nightclub analogy for a minute because I think it helps people kind of visualize things that when you put money into a retirement account, there's rules to follow. So just like if you go to a nightclub, once you get inside, you still have to follow some rules, okay? You can't just misbehave. You might find yourself in jail paying fines and penalties, things like that. When you put money into a Roth IRA and you don't follow the rules, you may find yourself paying taxes and paying penalties. So let's address the money that went in through the front door first, right? This is money you contributed because you were within the income limits. When you put that money into the Roth IRA, you don't have to wait until you're a certain age to get that money back out. That's one of the biggest misperceptions that people have. If I put in maybe $5,000 a year, my wife puts in $5,000 a year, you know, we're putting in a combined $10,000. Whenever we want, we can pull that money out. So maybe over the course of 10 years, we put in $100,000 and we want to pull that $100,000 back out. Doesn't matter if we want to send our daughter to school, if we want to buy a car, it doesn't matter. We can pull that out tax-free and penalty-free. It's the earnings that we made on that money. That money can't come out without paying taxes and potentially even having penalties.
Okay.
So the way that works, this is where things get a little tricky. The first thing the government looks at is, have you made your first contribution to this Roth IRA? Did you make it at least 5 years ago? And you're over the age of 59 and a half, the money can come out completely tax-free. If you died, spouse can pull the money out tax-free. Kids can pull it out tax-free. If you're disabled, money can come out tax-free. You don't have to wait for any waiting period. $10,000 can come out for a first-time home purchase. So if I'm going to take money out, so go back to my example where we put $100,000 in over the course of 10 years, but maybe the account's worth $175,000 and I decide I want to buy a boat. Well, I can still take the $100,000 out tax-free, but the $75,000 extra, that represents profit that I made on the investments inside of the Roth IRA. A boat is not an allowable expense. So I'm going to pay taxes, income taxes on that extra $75,000, plus I'm going to pay a penalty if I'm under the age of 59 and a half. So just like all government rules with retirement accounts, there's plenty of exceptions. So all these exceptions I'm going to list, you still owe income tax on the growth. You're just getting around the 10% penalty.
Okay.
So I already mentioned, you know, if you take money out because you're disabled or you're buying a house, like there's some ways around it there, but higher education expenses. If I'm taking that $75,000 of profit out and I'm paying tuition, I don't pay a 10% penalty on that, but I still pay the income tax.
Okay.
If I'm taking a series of payments out, and this is called a substantially equal distribution. So maybe I'm 50 years old and I'm taking an early retirement. And I follow it. There's a certain formula you have to follow, but I'm going to pull a certain amount of money out every single year, maybe for the next 10 or 15 years. I don't pay a penalty on that money. If I have unreimbursed medical expenses that are beyond 7.5% of my adjusted gross income, I don't pay the penalty. This is ironic. If there's a distribution that I have to make because there's an IRS levy, so the government wants the money, they don't penalize you on it.
Oh, that's nice of them.
How nice, right? So, I'm not going to go through every single
right
exception, but there's a handful in there. It's just one of those things where if you're going to be pulling money out, you have to know the rules, know where to look the rules up, consult with your CPA, et cetera.
All right. You talked about conversions just a little bit ago. I'm hearing a lot more about conversions lately from traditional IRA to Roth IRAs because potential tax savings. What are some points of confusion here that you've come across?
Okay, so this is where we get into this five-year rule that sounds very similar to what I just mentioned, but it's different. So again, for regular contributions, I have to have made my first contribution at least 5 years ago, and I'm over the age of 59 and a half to get my earnings out tax-free. So for regular contributions, like I mentioned, you can take your contributions back out, but converted money is very different. So if I have a large pre-tax IRA account, and I want to start to convert some of this over to a Roth IRA over time, the converted money has to stay in for 5 years. Otherwise, a 10% penalty applies.
Hmm.
So this is, again, very different, where if I'm putting money in because of my earnings, I'm contributing money every year and I want to pull it right back out, I don't have a waiting period. But converted money automatically has a 5-year waiting period. And every time you make a conversion, each conversion is like its own little block of money. It has its own 5-year clock that you have to track. So if you do this every single year, you probably ought to build a spreadsheet somewhere where you're tracking, what was my converted amount? What year did I make it? How long has it been? Otherwise, you can find yourself getting a little bit sideways with the IRS knowing some penalties.
Right, right.
Another thing that comes up with conversions is a point of confusion on where do I get the money to pay the tax? So you really need to have another pot of money, cash on hand from some other asset to pay the tax. So if I have $100,000 in my pre-tax IRA and I want to convert that entirely over to a Roth IRA, depending on my income tax bracket, I may owe maybe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 of income tax. So I better have another bucket of money to pay that tax when the tax filing deadline comes. Otherwise, if I have to cash in money from my IRA to pay the tax, right, now you're paying tax and potential penalties because that's considered a distribution. A third point of this, and this is where people get tripped up. They hear this idea behind the Roth conversion or the backdoor Roth, and they go, well, this is easy. I'm way over the income limit. I'm a high income earner, and I like this idea of the Roth IRA. I'm just going to make my after-tax contribution to my IRA, and I'm going to immediately turn around and convert it, and it's simple, right? Nice and easy. That's not the way it works. The IRS is going to look at all money you have in all types of IRAs. So they're going to look at total balances in all traditional IRAs in your name, SEP IRAs, simple IRAs. They add all that up. So let's give it an easy example so the audience can conceptualize this. Suppose you have $93,000 in a traditional IRA and you put $7,000 in post-tax because you want to convert that $7,000 into a Roth IRA. This is like adding cream to coffee. Once you add it, it's all mixed in. You cannot separate the two anymore. And that's how the IRS looks at this. They say, wait a minute, what was the proportion of post-tax money that went into this IRA? So when you go to convert that money over to a Roth, they're using this proportionate calculation. So in other words, this is why I use the numbers of $93,000 in the pre-tax account and $7,000 going in post-tax, because we can do the math in our head. That would mean that 7% of the money total in the IRA balance was considered post-tax. 93% was considered pre-tax. So when I go to do my conversion, 93% of those dollars, that $7,000 that's being converted over, is going to be taxable.
Wow.
And only 7% is going to be non-taxable. I can't even begin to tell you how many people I've met over the years that have been doing these conversions and not calculating it the right way.
Oh, no.
And if there's an audit and the IRS's computer systems are getting a little bit more sophisticated, you might find out that you owe a whole bunch of back taxes, and I'm sure there's probably going to be penalties involved. So remember, it's the percentage, or that's what they call it, the pro rata rule. What proportion of all of your IRA money is post-tax versus pre-tax? And that's how they figure out what's going into the Roth and how much you have to pay tax on.
You know, Jim,
there's mud.
All of this really has been helpful, but there's just so much. So how does someone figure out what they should be doing, whether they should be contributing, converting, the back door? I mean, the phrase tax-free, everybody goes, yes, let's do it. Let's do the Roth IRA. But is it the right thing for everybody?
Yeah. So first off, tax-free is very powerful. Do not get me wrong. I mean, we love when we have tax-free sources of retirement income. But we have to think about the game we're playing, the tax game we're playing. Sometimes the Roth IRA makes very little to no difference. Even though it sounds amazing, it's tax-free. Sometimes pre-tax ends up putting us in the exact same place. Sometimes it's a huge benefit. Sometimes it's the opposite, that the Roth causes us to pay more taxes, which kind of like boggles people's mind. Like, how can that result in me paying more taxes? So we're going to play a little game here, Patrice.
Okay.
And this is nothing I warned you about ahead of time. So I want to get your honest reaction to this. I want you to think of a few things our government is doing today that may require them to need more money in the future.
Everything.
Give me some examples.
Any of the social programs, any of the military spending overseas, the social programs in the U.S., there's so many of them, And well, hey, what about Social Security?
Social Security, we think of the national debt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's, we could probably have an entire episode on things that are happening in our country that is going to require the government to need more money in the future. Okay. So you passed part one. Part two of this game, I want you to name something the government is doing today that will require less money in the future.
I'm silent.
We need like the sound of crickets coming in.
Really?
There's not a whole lot we can come up with that says, oh, this is what the government's doing. They're going to need way less of our money in the future. There's not much on that list. So scariest website I'm aware of is usdebtclock.org.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've been to this, but it is a scary website. I went on it yesterday, and it said that there is roughly $34 trillion of debt the federal government owes. And it's crazy. This website, you can go back in time. I looked at it 20 years ago. That number was $7 trillion. Mm. So the national debt is compounding at about an 8% rate every year. And by 2028, they're projecting our federal debt to be $46 trillion.
Which I can't even imagine it. I just can't.
It's scary. And we have to think about, where's the government going to get the money to either pay down the debt or simply keep up with the payments on the debt? Most people are fearful of, well, one of the major solutions to covering that debt load is going to be increasing taxes. And if you think back to the late 1970s, early 1980s, traditional IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, they were a very popular way for people to save money because tax rates were higher back then. The 80s, they came back down, but the 70s, they were pretty high. And it was this way to contribute money, write off that from your tax return, enjoy all this tax-deferred growth throughout your career, and then you retire, and then you pay the tax. So there was a time period where it was fairly easy to avoid a higher tax rate and then plan for, well, I'll probably have a lower tax bracket when I retire. With all the spending going on, all the fears of what could happen to taxes, today's generation that's working right now, many people fear the opposite is going to happen. I might be putting money into a retirement account, and I'm deducting a lower tax rate today, and I might pay a much higher tax rate in the future. So taxes, it's a significant headwind to deal with. And we have to think about, what are our choices around dealing with this headwind? Can we minimize it? Can we avoid it? So there's a few important choices that we have to make when it comes to deciding, do we put money into a Roth IRA, traditional IRA, a little bit of both? Choice number one is, do I want to pay taxes once or do I want to pay taxes twice? This sounds like a no-brainer.
It does.
But this is how it works. You know, we go to work, we earn a paycheck, and we pay taxes on that paycheck. And then we invest the money, and depending on where we invest it, we're going to owe more taxes on the profit of that investment down the road. So this notion of paying taxes twice doesn't sit well with people, but that's the advantage of retirement accounts, is that you literally are paying the taxes only once. Okay, I'm going to take the money, I'm going to put it in the retirement account. I'm either going to pay the tax now, or I'll pay the tax later, but the tax is only paid one time. So it seems pretty obvious on that one. The second decision we have to make is, if we're going to pay taxes once, do we want to pay it now? Do we want to pay it later? It really depends. So it's going to depend on a host of variables, such as, what's my income like throughout my career? What's my income shaping up to look like when I'm retired? What are the sources of that income? What do tax rates look like today? What might they look like in the future? So a lot of this comes down to, how do I want to manage my tax risk? And this is where the Roth IRA can be very powerful and a great storage tank for wealth accumulation, is that you're able to play this game with a unique game piece.
Can you give us some examples on the math side, Jim, of Roth versus traditional? And again, when one makes more sense than the other?
So let me start off with a simple example. And this will kind of bust the myth that IRAs or Roth IRAs have a massive tax savings. This is where it really depends on what your tax bracket is. So I'm going to use a very simple bracket. Everybody can do this math at home. Let's just use a 25% tax bracket today. And when you retire, I'm going to use the same 25% tax bracket. Okay. And now you have a $10,000 chunk of change that you have to make a choice with. I can take the $10,000, I can put it into the traditional IRA pre-tax. So now the entire $10,000 balance is growing. I'll use a 7% return to my investment. And 20 years later, that $10,000 deposit will be worth $38,697. So if anyone's taking notes, write that down, $38,697. But the money's never been taxed. So if I withdraw that $38,000 and I pay my 25% tax in retirement, I'm left with $29,023. That's what I have left after tax. So that's our first choice. The second choice is I could take my $10,000, pay my 25% tax today. So I have $7,500 remaining to put into the Roth IRA. I'm going to invest in the exact same investment, get my same 7% growth rate. We invest for the same 20 years. And at the end, that $7,500 has grown to $29,023. It is to the penny the same, whether we did the Roth IRA or the traditional IRA, as long as our tax bracket stays constant throughout the entire thing. So does that mean the Roth is not better because the taxes are the same? Well, not really. I mean, the Roth still gives you more flexibility where I can grab my contributions and take them out without penalty, whereas the traditional IRA, I may still have penalties. I don't have to worry about forced distributions with Roth IRAs. So we hear people all the time dreading when they turn 73 with their 401k, 403b, traditional IRAs, they have these required minimum distributions. So the government's saying, you've enjoyed this tax benefit long enough, we are going to now force money to come out of this account so we can collect our tax bill. And if you don't take the money out, then they're going to levy additional penalties. You don't have any of that with Roth IRAs. Why? Because the government's done getting taxes anyway. So they don't really want to, they don't really care to force that money out. And it's also, it's tax-free to my beneficiaries. So it might be more of a control thing is the reason why the Roth would be more favorable than the traditional. So that's where it's the same. Let's go to an example where somebody has a higher tax bracket today, but they're in a lower tax bracket when you retire. That's where the traditional pre-tax contributions will win. So this may work really well for somebody who's a high income earner, but they're getting a really late start on saving for retirement. Somebody who has maybe low balances in their traditional retirement accounts, they might be saying, well, I'm in this huge tax bracket now, and my retirement income sources are not going to be that significant coming from these traditional IRA or 401k accounts. So I might as well take the deduction today. And when I pull that money out in the future, that's my taxable income. It's going to be much lower. And I think I have a pretty good shot of being in a lower bracket later on. So that's where the traditional would actually be more effective than the Roth. I'm seeing more people now where it's the opposite. They're in a lower bracket today, and they're highly likely to be in a much higher bracket when they retire. So maybe their bracket today is 25%. But when they retire, maybe it's going to look more like 40%. If that's the case, that's when the Roth wins. So you might be thinking, well, when does that actually pan out for people? Well, sometimes it's early in people's careers. They're at the lowest income point they're ever going to be in throughout their career. I'm thinking of physicians, dentists, lawyers, teachers, a lot of business owners that we work with, a lot of people that are on executive tracks. So there's a lot of career paths where you start off with a much lower income, but you're on a pretty, I would say, a highly probable path to being a much higher income later. So while you're in these lower earning years, the Roth IRA may be a great opportunity to get that money going away while you're in a low bracket, because you're going to be in a higher bracket later on. So the other thing about a lot of these professionals is that they tend to have very generous retirement packages from their employers, and they're all funded with pre-tax dollars. So you might get to retirement with a significant income that's all coming from taxable accounts. That's when loading up that Roth IRA was probably a much better idea when you were young, and maybe another reason why you start to do some Roth conversions as you get closer to retirement.
So, all right, Jim, again, there's so much here. I love this. Can you give us a wrap-up, a kind of a roundup on when a Roth conversion makes the most sense?
Sure. I think the easiest example is when the income is lower now than it's expected to be in the future, a Roth conversion can make sense. So think about your tax bracket is a bunch of tax buckets. And maybe I'm in the current 24% tax bracket, and I've got a long way to go before I reach the next tax bracket. So I might start to convert chunks of my traditional IRA into a Roth while I'm in that same 24% bracket, and I'm just careful not to cross into the higher bracket. That's an easy example, especially if your fear is, I think the government's going to change the brackets, I think they're going to change the rates, and I think they're going to be much higher in the future. So sometimes it's the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So that's one example. Another one, a little bit more strategic, would be if we go through a significant decline in the financial markets. So I'm thinking about a period like we saw in 2008, mm-hmm. where in 1 year, the S&P 500 was down about 40%. You might say to yourself, well, markets tend to recover. this is really beat down in value right now. Let me convert a huge chunk of this now while my portfolio is down, get it into the Roth. And that way, when the rebound occurs, I've sheltered a lot of that growth from future taxation. So, you know, I would say most people are doing this either strategically, like when there's a big market fluctuation, or they're converting that slowly over time, you know, just starting to fill those brackets, like we talked about, those different buckets. And they're making this conversion happen where it's over a longer period, they can kind of manage their tax exposure. And the other thing is, you know, people that don't want to have to worry about the effects of RMDs, so required minimum distributions, those are the ones that, you know, start to really think in advance and start to make these conversions, because they're thinking, well, maybe my income is going to be about the same in retirement as it is now. Yeah, rates may go up a little bit. I'm not that worried. But when they start to figure out the forced distributions coming from other accounts, they might find themselves, whether they like it or not, forced to take very large distributions and forcing them into a higher and higher tax bracket. And they just don't want to play that game. So they say, you know what, I'm going to make the conversion. And that way I don't have to have these government rules dictating how I play the tax game.
Got it. Jim, there's so many points here, so many ins and outs. How can listeners reach you if they need some questions answered?
Sure. So a couple of ways to reach us. One, you can just go on our website and there's a contact us button. Tell us that you listen to the show and you know, you're reviewing this as your kind of Roth IRA owner's manual and you have some questions, and we'll sit down and we'll talk about how this applies to you. The other thing you can do, you can just email us. Send us an email at info@mcgovernwealth.com. And same thing, tell us you're a fan of the show and you have some questions, and we'll help you out any way we can.
You heard it here, listeners. Roth versus traditional Roth. Look at the details, the conversions. Hey, get your owner's manual, right? Follow this podcast, Maximizing Outcomes, to know when the latest episode is ready for you. And please share with others. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for listening to the Maximizing Outcomes podcast, brought to you by Jim McGovern and the McGovern Wealth Group. Be sure to follow the show to be notified when new episodes become available. To suggest a topic or guest for a future episode, or learn more about how we can help to maximize outcomes in your life, visit our website at www.mcgovernwealth.com. This podcast is intended for general public use and is for informational purposes only. Guest speakers and their firms are not affiliated with or endorsed by Park Avenue Securities, Guardian, or McGovern Wealth Group, and opinions stated are their own. By providing this content, Park Avenue Securities, LLC is not undertaking to provide investment advice or a recommendation for any specific individual or situation, or to otherwise act in a fiduciary capacity. Please contact a financial representative for guidance and information that is specific to your individual situation. Guardian, its subsidiaries, agents, and employees do not provide tax, legal, or accounting advice. Consult your tax, legal, or accounting professional regarding your individual situation. Jim McGovern is a registered representative and financial advisor of Park Avenue Securities, LLC, PAS. Securities products and advisory services offered through PAS. Member FINRA, SIPC. Financial representative of the Guardian Life Insurance Company of America. Guardian, New York, New York. PAS is a wholly owned subsidiary of Guardian. McGovern Wealth Group is not an affiliate or subsidiary of PAS or Guardian. CA Insurance License Number 0F67329. AR Insurance License Number 7119103. California Insurance License Number 0F67329. Arkansas Insurance License Number 7119103.
Tax laws are subject to change. Roth earnings can grow tax-free, and qualified withdrawals are tax and penalty-free. Roth IRA withdrawal and penalty rules vary depending on your age, how long you've had the account, and other factors. Guardian, its subsidiaries, agents, and employees do not provide tax, legal, or accounting advice. Consult your tax, legal, or accounting professional regarding your individual situation. Compliance number 2024-170235 expires March of 2026.